This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, October 4th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's show, we'll look at how mental health professionals are grappling with pandemic-fueled youth mental health needs and staff shortages. This Week in Water reports on how a preliminary analysis concluded that human-induced climate change increased Hurricane Ian's rainfall by 10%. And we'll go to our listener comment line. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have an update from the BBC News headlines. Volunteer-powered How on Earth is taking a break this week. In its place, we'll bring you the latest episode of the Rising Tide podcast. At 9 a.m. comes Alan Watts, the British philosopher, writer, and speaker known for interpreting Eastern religious ideas for a Western audience. Then at 9:30, James Wise will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead, but first it's time for headlines with KGNU's Luis Licon.
Broomfield's Good Samaritan Hospital was the scene of an intense police presence Monday afternoon. Around 2:30, local police received reports of shots fired in the vicinity of the hospital. Officers arrived on the scene and swept the building to find no threat. They issued an all-clear message shortly after 4 p.m. Police say that the person who reported hearing gunshots was interviewed and did not have malicious intent in making the call. Boulder City Council is considering a permitting process to allow businesses to sell cannabis and the option of having a space for on-premises consumption. KGNU's James Swinson has more.
Local authorities in Boulder have been mulling the possibility of licensing cannabis bars since May of 2021. Some ideas for consideration include limiting the hours of operation to no later than 10 p.m., requiring smaller doses for edibles, and requesting that customers sign a pre-entrance waiver that includes a transportation plan following consumption. One of the most significant recommendations is to restrict entry to those ages 25 and older. Supporters say that doing so is a good way to take into account the feedback that the board has heard from parents and advocates regarding the potential impacts of young adults using cannabis. But others argue that enacting strict regulations will not have the desired safety effect, but instead would drive young adults to use cannabis in unregulated and unmonitored spaces. Colorado legalized cannabis for adults 21 or older nearly 10 years ago, and a bill allowing social consumption establishments passed through the state legislature in 2019. Denver and other surrounding communities that allow cannabis cafes have kept the 21-year age limit. The goal in Boulder is to have recommendations ready for a public hearing before the city's Cannabis Licensing and Advisory Board in the first quarter of 2023. The responsibility then falls on members of Boulder City Council to determine what limitations, if any, moving forward. For KGNU, I'm James Swenson.
The city of Boulder is asking residents to take extra bear precautions over the next few weeks. Bears are currently entering hyperphagia, which means preparing to hibernate. They stuff up on fat and food. This kind of bear activity usually occurs during late summer and early fall. It can also mean increased bear activity within neighborhoods. The city is asking residents to remove food or anything that smells like food from outdoor areas of their property and to secure their trash in bear-proof trash cans. The Boulder Valley School District has agreed to settle a lawsuit involving two former Fairview High School students. The lawsuit argues Fairview staff fostered an environment permissive to sexual assault misconduct, violating Title IX, a federal law that prohibits discrimination based on sex. Title IX also requires schools receiving federal funding to investigate and fix hostile educational environments. The students presented the lawsuit in 2021 when the school failed to investigate allegations of sexual misconduct against a student athlete in the 2016-2017 school year. BVSD said in an email to the Denver Post that it will not comment directly on the matter until the finalization of the settlement. Even though both of the district and the students have not yet finalized the settlement, both parties have to agree by October 31st. The St. Vrain Valley School District partnered with CU Denver to add a pathway in technology early college in high school science, technology, and math program, or STEM P-TECH pathway, this month. The P-TECH pathway originally started in the spring of 2018 as a concurrent enrollment program that helps students get college credit while still in high school. Community members gathered in Niwot Monday night to commemorate the death of a longtime pizza restaurant owner, Craig Lefty Harris, who died in a car crash last week. Lefty Pizza was a Niwot stable that opened in downtown Niwot 28 years ago yesterday. Craig Lefty Harris was a trained astrophysicist and a part of a team of scientists who discovered Neptune's rings back in the 1980s. Harris opened Lefty's knowing little about pizza but determined to learn. According to the Daily Camera, people dressed in Hawaiian shirts to honor Lefty's signature style spilled out of the restaurant and onto the patio at last night's vigil. The weather today is going to be a little bit cool with temperatures in Boulder in the high 66 and the low of 45 with a current temperature outside of the Boulder studio of 47 degrees. In Fort Collins, there's going to be a high of 68 and a low of 43 with a current temperature of 45 degrees. In Denver, there's going to be a high of 71 and a low of 47 with a current temperature of 49 degrees. And for KGNU, I am Luis Licon.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. One of the more lasting effects of the COVID-19 pandemic is how it has impacted youth mental health. From extended isolation to canceled rites of passage events to intensified anxiety, the pandemic has brought on a youth mental health crisis like none other in living memory for many in this country. And how best to approach it and treat it has its own challenges. Joining me today are two guests who work on the issue and who will be speaking at an event this Sunday. Reverend Sarah Lund is a senior pastor at First Congregational United Church of Christ in Indianapolis. She also serves on the national staff of the United Church of Christ as the Minister for Disabilities and Mental Health Justice. Lund's latest book is called Blessed Youth, Breaking the Silence About Mental Illness, Children and Teens. Also joining us this morning is Jenna Clinchard, Executive Director of the Boulder County-based organization Rise Against Suicide, which works primarily with youth in the Boulder Valley and the St. Vrain Valley School Districts. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Sarah, let's start with you. Your book has the same title as the talk that you'll be giving this Sunday. What's it about?
This is a story that is impacting all of us. If you care about a young person, then this is a topic that is close to you. Mental health impacts all of us. And right now, what we're focusing on is how children and teens are experiencing levels of mental health crisis never seen before. The Surgeon General released an advisory in December of 2021, really calling for all hands on deck. There are so many risks involved facing our youth, and the invitation is for everyone in the community to work together to end the stigma, break the silence, and partner so that all of our children and teens have access to support, resources, mental health care, and to reduce the barriers to care. And so I'm so grateful for this community for creating space to share true stories. And I share my own. I live in a family where we are all impacted by mental health challenges, and I am a suicide loss survivor. And so I do this work in memory of Sydney, my niece who died by suicide at age 16. And so this is very real to me. And I want to create an opportunity for other families to get support so that we can save lives.
Jenna Clinchard, this next question is for you. What exactly is going to happen at this event that's scheduled for Sunday? You're part of the team organizing it?
Yeah, so really, I love the title of this. We really are trying to break the silence on mental health, right? There's such a stigma around mental health and suicide. And we're trying to create a safe space for people to feel free to share about their experiences and to share their hopes around mental health, right? Because mental health, we tend to always talk about hopelessness, but there are so many people that have found in their journey, they found their way through their darkness and into hope, right? And so we're going to have 6 breakout sessions where people can learn. I mean, we're going to have Out Boulder there who will talk about LGBTQIA plus community, Coley's Closet, that's peer-to-peer training in schools. What we've learned is that sometimes kids can hear better from other kids, right? They may feel safer to share about their journey. We'll have NAMI there, and we'll have a school psychologist there. And so we'll have breakout sessions where people can learn. And then we'll also have a panel of five people where people can ask questions. And we can just really have an open conversation about mental health. And again, going back to creating a safe space for people to have those conversations is so very important.
Colorado has a shortage of certified mental health practitioners, and burnout has only increased with the pandemic. How are you seeing the situation here on the ground as far as replenishing the pool of mental health counselors and being able to grapple with this increased demand?
So I think the state is working on some policies, some laws that may help people get licensed in our state and be able to become a trained, licensed professional. I think that will help. In terms of burnout, I think it's so important, Shannon, that we recognize that we're all human, right? So even our therapists and counselors that are treating our youth, they take this home with them. And we need to do better in terms of taking care of our mental health providers so we can avoid this burnout, because the burnout is real right now. And so is, I mean, for example, we saw 333 kiddos last year. That's 134% increase from the year prior, to give everyone an idea of what these therapists are facing. The Surgeon General called for the state of emergency for a reason, as did Children's Hospital. Last year, they called a state of emergency in Colorado.
You mentioned this increase. Is that specifically with suicidal cases?
Yeah, kiddos struggling with suicidal ideation. That is specifically in our program, Rise Against Suicide. Yeah, and right now we're averaging about 1 to 2 referrals a day from schools, from our partners, our community partners. Mm-hmm. Our kids are still struggling. It's not over.
I thought I heard that suicide is now one of the leading causes of death for teens in Colorado, if not the number one leading cause of death.
It is, unfortunately, Sarah. Mm-hmm. It goes back and forth between 1 and 2. So we probably are at 1 right now, unfortunately.
And a lot of the lethality of suicide is the silence around it, the stigma of even saying, are you thinking about dying? And it's critical that we all can ask that question and know how to respond and get the person help, that we all are prepared in advance. And that's part of what my work does, is to help everyone have a safety plan, to have your own mental health safety plan, to have every child have a safety plan, have trusted adults they know who they can tell, know what to say, and have a plan of how to get help.
Part of a plan of getting help also is having the insurance to be able to do it, or knowing which providers take the insurance that you might have. That's a huge struggle, is the ability to pay for it, insured or uninsured. What options are on the table here? Going back to Jenna Clincher, just locally, what are the options for youth who may not be able to get in to see a certified mental health practitioner on short notice?
So currently it is Rise Against Suicide. If a child is struggling with suicidal ideation, we serve uninsured and underinsured youth. Underinsured is pretty big for us. So let's say there's a kiddo who has insurance and their family can't afford the deductible, they can come to us. Let's say there's a family whose child is struggling with suicidal ideation. What all three of us know is we can't tell that child to wait 3 to 6 months. We can't do an intake and say, now hold on to that, we'll get back. They can come to us and get that service immediately. So we fill that gap, basically. Those kids can come to us while their parents are looking for a therapist through their insurance. And we find that that gap needs to be filled more often than not. We do accept uninsured. No matter what someone's income is, we pay for their therapy sessions. Families will never see a bill. So we have us as a resource for suicidal ideation. In terms of mental health, there's mental health partners that you can go and you can get an intake. They take Medicaid. They do take insurance. There are a lot of therapists that take Medicaid in our community. We just don't have a lot of places that take uninsured and underinsured youth right now, especially when it comes to struggling with suicidal ideation. That really is Rise Against Suicide. And we are equipped. A lot of people say, well, how do you handle that? How are your therapists staying? We're very fortunate that we have 4 full-time therapists. And then the rest of our therapists see probably 3 to 4 kids. So we are staffed and we can handle the referrals.
Now, going back to Reverend Sarah Lund, in your title at the United Church of Christ, you are the Minister for Disabilities and Mental Health Justice. What is the justice aspect of mental health?
Access to care is exactly what we're talking about. We do not have a just healthcare system in the United States. People are dying because they're not getting the care that they need. Our children are dying. Like Jenna said, this is a 24-hour turnaround. A child cannot wait to receive care when they are in a crisis. And so we are inviting the community to support programs like Jenna's and to make sure that every child has access to care. And it should not be dependent on their wealth, on their race, on any socioeconomic factors. Everyone deserves quality care. Everyone deserves a chance to be well and healthy and not have to face these barriers of discrimination based on economic status, based on your gender identity or sexual orientation, or based on race. But here in the United States, we are so divided among these realities. And racism impacts mental health. Homophobia and transphobia impact mental health. So that's where the justice comes in. Equality among everyone and equal access to quality care.
And before we wrap up, I want to toss this back to Jenna. Give us the information again about the event happening on Sunday and how people can find out more.
Sure. So the event is October 9th. It is 3 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. And it's at Atonement Lutheran Church, which is 685 Inca Parkway in Boulder. And people can go to the INMI site, INMI, in Boulder, Colorado, and you can find out more information there about the event. And we hope you can join us, and we look forward to seeing you.
I've been speaking with Reverend Sarah Lund, author of Blessed Youth, Breaking the Silence About Mental Illness, Children and Teens, and Jenna Clinchard, Executive Director of the Boulder County-based Rise Against Suicide. Thanks to you both for joining me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Shannon.
Time now for the latest edition of This Week in Water with Jamie Sudler and Franny Halperin.
How solar panels save water. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
It's likely to be the single biggest release of the potent greenhouse gas methane ever recorded.
Ruptures of the Nord Stream natural gas pipeline system under the Baltic Sea may have been acts of sabotage, with Ukraine pointing the finger at Russia and Russia blaming the U.S. and Ukraine.
After pressure drops in the pipelines were noticed, seismological records showed explosions had occurred that were unlike earthquakes or landslides. The sea surface showed the gas leaking into the atmosphere.
While the pipelines were not operational, they contained gas under pressure that bubbled to the surface in areas several hundred yards in size. Swedish and Danish officials told the UN Security Council that the gas plumes could be dangerous to marine life and were disrupting sea and air traffic.
There were 2 leaks detected in the Nord Stream 1 pipeline that had stopped delivering gas in August. There was 1 in the newer Nord Stream 2 pipeline that had not gone into operation.
Just how much methane has leaked is not yet known, but could be the equivalent of the annual carbon emissions from 2 million cars.
After Hurricane Ian hit the U.S. last week, killing at least 67 people, there were forecasts that record river flooding could continue this week in parts of Florida. Ian was one of the most powerful hurricanes to hit the U.S. in the past decade.
A preliminary analysis concluded that human-induced climate change increased the storm's rainfall by 10%, an amount that isn't small when on top of an already intense storm. If there's 1 foot of rainfall in a day, the researchers say an extra inch or more can amplify the impact.
Global warming causes the atmosphere to hold up to 7% more water for every 1 degree Celsius of temperature rise. All that moisture can be released quickly, flooding cities and filling rivers.
Ian intensified rapidly from a tropical storm to a hurricane in less than a day, becoming close to Category 5 strength. The same intensification occurred last year with Hurricane Ida, which devastated parts of Louisiana.
According to NASA, Hurricane Ian moved over an abundant fuel source in the Gulf of Mexico, where sea surface temperatures off Cuba and Florida were above long-term averages.
Records were set for the highest storm surge ever recorded in Fort Myers and Naples, Florida. By now, you might have seen the viral video of a shark swimming in a flooded backyard in Fort Myers, but generally speaking, sharks and other marine life evacuate long before a storm arrives, according to Bradley Strickland at the Virginia Institute of Marine Science, who studies aquatic animal responses to hurricanes and climate change.
He told Popular Science that while some animals are better equipped to ride out hurricanes, sharks are among the best. The creatures use their sensitive inner ears to detect a gathering storm's barometric pressure changes and start heading for deeper water.
Given that some can swim up to 45 miles an hour, they can easily escape, that is, if they choose to. For some larger predators like tiger sharks, hurricanes can be the ultimate smorgasbord to chow down on dead birds and fish.
For animals that can't relocate, finding shelter may be the only option. Sea snakes will seek refuge in volcanic rocks, and alligators will likely hunker down. Florida's beloved manatee may not be as lucky. The animals can get trapped inland after floodwaters recede.
But as much as aquatic life may have evolved to survive storms, humans pose the bigger threat by encroaching on habitats and adding carbon into the atmosphere that's been supercharging storms' destructive power. And finally, if you have rooftop solar on your house, you might have installed the panels to produce clean, renewable energy. But did you know you were also conserving water?
Energy production in the U.S. consumes nearly as much water as the agricultural sector because it takes volumes to mine and burn coal, frack and pump natural gas, and cool nuclear plants.
But solar panels, once they're installed, it's zip, zilch, zero, not a drop. That's according to a pair of Duke University researchers who did the math. They say an average U.S. household with rooftop solar may reduce the need for over 16,000 gallons of water per year to produce energy.
The authors estimate that the current amount of rooftop solar represents a savings of 99 billion gallons a year, the equivalent to around 4 days of California's total water usage. And as solar installations grow, so too will the savings.
The study compared water consumption for energy by state and found New England would benefit by converting to solar because they don't use electricity for air conditioning and tend to heat their homes with oil.
Arizona and California, states that have water shortages and a lot of sunny days, would also be big winners.
Water use is only part of the picture, however. Contamination from mining, oil spills, and coal ash disposal reduce its availability overall, meaning the water footprint from fossil fuels is larger than we think.
That's it for This Week in Water. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
We now check in with KGNU's comment line and the listeners who share their thoughts about what they hear on KGNU.
Hi, I'm a KGNU listener member, and I'm listening to an interesting discussion on, I think this is Wednesday morning, about the ballot issue involving moving city council elections to even-numbered years instead of odd-numbered years. It's been helpful to hear about that issue. I've been wondering, as I've been listening to the discussion, what the party affiliations are of the two individuals who are speaking, and especially, I think just one of them is on the city council. I didn't hear their introduction, so maybe both of them are. In any event, so I went, took a quick hop on the internet and tried to find the party affiliations of Boulder City Council members, and I couldn't find it, which was startling to me. And so I would love it if KGNU, anybody at KGNU knows what the answer to that is. Do they hide the city council party member affiliations, and why would that be? By they, I mean the city council, not KGNU. Why is it so hard to find those affiliations? So, yeah, I'd love to hear about that at some point on KGNU. Thanks. Bye.
To answer the listener's question, Boulder City Council elections are nonpartisan, which is why candidates and representatives don't declare party affiliation. They do, however, often affiliate with slates. That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Thanks to Luis Licon, James Swenson, Alexis Kenyon, interview guests Reverend Sarah Lund and Jenna Clinchard, and H2O Radio's Jamie Sudler and Franny Halperin for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Stay tuned for the Rising Tide podcast. That's coming up just after the news headlines from the BBC.